We've got a lot to go through this morning, I know, because I know the verse I'm preaching out of, and I love this story. I know the way I am, I can preach on a short verse, and this is a whole bunch of them. I'll take one short verse, and I can't stop. I keep going. I'll take it a word at a time. I like to have other people read the verses sometimes, because then I don't feel as like I'm going to take every few words and talk about it. What ends up happening is I interrupt them all the time. So this morning, we're going to talk about David. I love the story of David. David's one of my favorites in the Bible. As a little kid, if you don't remember the stone and the giant and the little David and the big, that's, as a kid, it's like the epic story. It's the, you know, the little David can take down a big giant. It's one of those cool stories. It's like Samson in the, if you were to go to the pantheon of children favorite stories, it's a Samson type story. Like for a little kid, a guy that can rip off the gates of a city and like, yeah. As a little kid, you're like, that was the first superhero. Like, that was Superman, basically. And they called him Samson. You know, the story of David is kind of like that as a little kid. You're like, this little guy could do something. You know, when you feel like you're little, and you don't have to mean just in stature. This is the way you can feel about yourself. I have little achievement. I'm doing little with my life. I'm not having the impact I really want to have. You can feel like a David, and you need one of these hero stories to remind you, hey, you can do something. Yeah, you've had only a little impact, but that little teeny rock could take down a big giant, couldn't it? Amen. Anyway, we better at least get started, or we're certainly not going to finish. I'm going to skip all the parts that are in the beginning that I normally talk about. I love the fact that David was a grocery errand boy at the time when he showed up at the army. I love that he was just bringing cheese and bread and stuff to the army. I love that because most of us would get humiliated with that kind of a job. Like, what's your job today? Oh, I'm just going to the grocery store and picking up some cheese and bread. What's your job? Like, you know, I'm a preach the word person, and you're a what did you do? I brought coffee. Well, you might be the David bringing the coffee who's about to throw a rock at the giant because everybody at the camp that's over there, the big strong warriors all in battle array set up against the army, they're also hiding in holes.
Yep, they sure were.
I love that part of the story. You see, I preached on it even though I didn't read it. I've been there to the valley. I've seen the two mountains. It's awesome to think about two armies. This was Judah's land. So the Philistines came in and they camped up on one mountaintop and they set themselves against the army of Israel. It's a cool picture if you see it, especially because you're like, whoa, like this is where this happened. And one of the things I love about the story is this isn't the way that Israel fought. This is the way that the Philistines fought, because Goliath even said to him, he said, don't you know I'm a Philistine? That's Israel didn't. Have you ever heard of Israel fighting where they're like, we have a champion, you beat our champion and we're going to be your servants? No, that was a Philistine thing. And they knew that was a Philistine thing, but it's not the way we're supposed to fight. The reason I'm mentioning that is because the devil's always going to want to get you to go fight on his terms according to the way it looks on his side of things and see his perspective, just like the snake in the Garden of Eden. Just look at my perspective for a minute. That's what the devil's going to try and get you to do, because then you're going to be sitting there scared to death. I mean, come on. You had a million guys. You don't think you could have charged one giant and just killed him on the way to the army you're going to go fight? But you fought their way because you listened to one guy. Uh-huh. You're like, that guy's huge. We don't have a champion that can be that guy. Well, you never fought 1v1 before.
Come on.
That's not how God has you fight. You didn't ask God, how do we fight this thing? You just believed the enemy.
Oh, come on.
Like, oh, the enemy is really, he's got something there. That they are right. They're Philistines. We don't just fight Philistines like we fight. Like, no, you fight them the way that God tells you to fight.
Amen.
Anyway, I haven't even read a verse and we're already touching some of my favorites. You got to understand, I love this story. There's a lot to this story. There's a lot of depth. I'm not even going to get to all the depth. I might get to parts of it as we read through it. And I want to say this because Goliath didn't just taunt the people for a day. It wasn't like Goliath had just taunted them and yelled at them and come and challenged them. And then all of a sudden that same day, David shows up and is like, hey, what's going on, guys? Oh, there's a giant. Like, no, this was 40 days of taunting. This was 40 days of fear. So whenever you fight something and you feel like this is a scary deal, I'm battling this, it could be a health issue, it could be a mental issue, it could be a relationship issue, it could be a financial issue, it could be burdens in your life, it could be visions dying, dreams dying, you know, I don't know how we're going to achieve it. Whenever you're fighting that for a longer period of time, you've heard me preach this before, well, the people that have, if you even hold a pebble in your hand like this for long enough, it gets heavy. It doesn't have to get bigger. It just gets heavy. It feels heavy. The longer you fight and battle something, the longer you deal with something, the longer it goes on, the heavier it gets. The worse it is. Now it's a giant. Now it's still just a pebble. I can't even lift my arm. that same little thing because you've fought it longer. You see, that's what time does when you don't deal with something quick. That's what time does. We were talking just the other day about if you try 12 times to leave when you were supposed to leave, 12 times now you've extended that, and now it's a huge boulder, not a teeny little pebble. Now it's a big, giant deal, and it has this huge effect, and it crushes part of who you are instead of it being just that little deal. And it's the same little deal. All of a sudden, it's gotten bigger because of time. We let this thing go, and we let it go, and we let it go, and we let it go. Hey, Goliath was huge, wasn't he? But one day, Goliath was this big. One day in his life, he was just this big. He wasn't born this big. He was born like a little baby, and he grew up to be huge. You let those little things go too long, and they're going to be a giant. I've learned this. Now, I want to say this because when all the men of Israel, David comes up on the camp. Let's go into 1 Samuel 17, and we'll go over to verse 23. Then as he talked with them, there was a champion of the Philistines, of Gath, Goliath, by the name, coming up by the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them, same words that he'd been taunting them with for the 40. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. Not a little bit afraid. This isn't like, you know, I saw this movie, it was a scary movie, I was dreadfully afraid. Like, no, you weren't. You had a little bit of a being afraid. You know, I talk about scary movies all the time because people get afraid of the stupidest things, like a little white girl with straight long hair, you know, walking through a doorway like, oh my gosh, it's scary. Like, no, oh my gosh, that's just a little girl. Like, oh, get over here. What are you so afraid of? It's because, you know, they play that music and all of a sudden you're afraid. That Jaws tune, remember the dun-dun? They play that and you're like instantly afraid. Like, whoa, get out of the water. Maybe my toe's in the water. Like, I don't know what's going in the water. They know how to bring a spirit with it, but really you're not dreadfully afraid no matter what. You might jump, you might scream, but you're not dreadfully afraid. If you're dreadfully afraid, you wouldn't sit there. So, and I love that they're phrasing to him as well. They said, so the men of Israel said, have you seen this man? I love that. It's David comes to them, right? And he's asking them, what's the deal with this? And here's these guys on the camp, the army, like this is the military. You know, we got military here. Imagine you guys have a relative that comes up to you. You're on the base. There's an enemy encroaching. It's in sight. And you got one of your family members that comes up to you and they start telling you, what's the deal with this? You know, you haven't even been through basic. What are you talking about? What's this? You know, you don't have any idea what you're talking about. And David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done with the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? David recognizes, this is in verse 26, David recognizes that there's a reproach on Israel because of this giant. He recognizes this is a problem. And he recognizes as well, did you hear David telling all the men, what kind of cowards are you guys hiding in holes? Did he say that? No, that's the kind of thing we'd want to say. What are all you chickens doing? If it wasn't for all you chickens, maybe the giant would be dead. Mm-hmm. Hey, this isn't the way that's the way we like to do stuff. You know, if you roll up on your friend's house or your brother's house or your mother's house or your father's house and you see them in the coward position, hiding in a hole, dealing with this thing, what you want to do is point out, what do you think you're doing hiding in a hole? What, are you a coward? Don't you remember? You see, this is we're not trying to fix it. We're trying to point out the fact that they're not fixing it. That's not helpful to anybody. All that does is makes them feel bad and you feel slightly better, but really you feel worse. Yeah. Yeah. But you feel slightly better because they're not as good. It's a nasty thing. It's a nasty thing. What's going to happen to the guy who takes away this Philistine, this reproach from Israel? For who is it, this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? David didn't say the well-trained armies, did he? He didn't say all you guys who've been through all so many battles. He didn't say because of your boot camp, because you came out, because you've been conditioned, because of your armor. He said of the living God. He was saying this is the reason why he should not be able to defy you is because the living God, right? Yep. And the people answered him in this manner saying, so it shall be done for the man who kills him. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard them when he was speaking to the men and his anger was aroused against David. I've talked about this before. His anger was aroused against his brother. This is the older brother of David. And when he heard David saying this stuff, and what was David saying? You cowards? You chickens? You dogs? No. He was saying, what's going to happen when somebody takes away this reproach and kills this guy? What happens to him? Now, he already knew everybody knew what David was insinuating with that, because he wasn't saying, hey, which one of you guys is going to get this cool prize? I just wanted to find out. He was obviously saying, if I need to do this, I'll do this. What's going to happen to me if I do this? That's what he's saying, right? This is what he's saying. His anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here? He obviously knew. You don't think he got the bread and the cheese? Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? In other words, all you've done in your life is take care of just a few sheep, and you're here trying to tell us what to do. That's all you do. Now, it was, listen, a few sheep. People back in those days, a few sheep wasn't what we would think a few sheep. Like, if I was like, hey, can you take care of a few sheep this afternoon? You'd be like, eh, a few sheep. You know, what's the big deal? Back in those days, a few sheep, this isn't like 100 sheep. This isn't like 300 sheep. This isn't like 1,000 sheep. Like, when they got a few sheep from one of the battles, it was 600,000 plus. So this wasn't like, oh, we got a few sheep. Like, he was just tending a few sheep. So, like, you basically put a little fence around him. You're like, you know, you counted your three or four sheep. Like, this is not the David situation that was going on here. That's what he's belittling him is the point I'm getting at. He's making light of the other man's achievements. This man who's coming to try and speak good to him, he's making light of him. We do the same thing when a minister comes to try and speak some good to us, or a friend comes to speak some good to us, or we get to the Bible and we read that verse that tries to speak some good to us, or we hear that worship song that's trying to tell us some good to us, and we do the same thing. We make light of it. Oh, it's not that important. It's not that big. It's not that. You could do that this morning and be like, well, it's just a light little crowd in here. Yeah, we're not a church launched. We're a church launched. Thing. We're going to launch this coming year. If you want to look at the little and belittle it, then you're going to get affected very little from it. I know your pride and the insolence of your heart. It's weird because God said David had a heart after him. But his brother said an entirely different thing, which that leads me to believe his brother did not know his heart whatsoever, did he? For you have come down to see the battle. This is what he's telling him. You just came down to see something cool. You just wanted to see a fight. That's what you did, David. You're talking about all this stuff. Your mouth's all big and going. And all you did is came down to just see a fight because you don't even know what a fight is. And here we're going to fight. He's belittling him. He's trying to discourage him. He's trying to get him on his way and rebuke him. And this is the cool thing. And David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Is there no reason for what it is I'm saying? We need a cause to believe in. David's saying, isn't there one? And then the coolest thing happened. Then he turned from him to another. God, I wish we'd do that. I wish when somebody came to belittle our lives, discourage us from trying to serve and do and fight and make it, that we'd stop facing that person and turn from them and go to another. And he kept repeating what it is he said. I wish we'd do that. I wish we'd have enough sense to do that. What we tend to have the sense to do is stay with that person, try to get in a long discussion with that person, try to win them over to our point of view, and at the end of it, we feel like the dog, we feel like the hole, we feel like we've been beat, we feel like laying down. I just need a nap. Why do you need a nap? Well, I feel like a nap. Like, I don't want to admit I'm depressed, I just feel like a nap. Now this is cool because I'm gonna skip a little bit. The word gets over to Saul, and again, David says to Saul over in verse 32, he said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go ahead. No, wait a second. He says something completely different. He says, you are not able to go. I'm not allowing you to go. He said, you're not able to go. Then he makes it even clearer. You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you're a youth, and that man... that man of war has been a man of war since his youth. In other words, you're just a kid. That guy's been a man of war, a battle man, a warrior since he was your age. Like, you see him now? He's been a fighter since your age, and now he's now. You're your age and haven't been a fighter even a day. That's what Saul's saying. This is after David says, hey, don't let anybody be worried. Nobody be troubled. Don't even worry about this. I got this. I'll take care of this guy. Nobody, don't even let your heart be unsettled. Go and drink some coffee. Sit down in your chair. Relax. This will be done by... And Saul's response to him was, you can't do this. You are too little. You don't have enough experience. Mm-hmm. Right? This is cool. Again, we can go through this. I could go through the points, but it says, David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. I love this. When did he used to keep his sheep? Yesterday. Right? He was just sent from keeping the sheep. But in David's perspective, my life just changed because of this giant. I am no longer the keeper of the sheep.
Come on.
I've already changed my position. You see what's happened? I used to keep my father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took the lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Anybody who can catch a lion or a bear, he didn't say a koala. That's not what you'd do, is it? A lion and a bear comes after you, like, give me your beard. No, you would not. You'd be like, I'm waiting for the cat, the kitty cat. One that you can put kitty before the word cat. Like, I don't want a lion. A lion comes close to you, its head's like this. You grab its little beard and you're like, I need bigger hands. Like, his little beard's like this. And David talks to him about this and basically says, I struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them. I love this because he's telling Saul a very important thing. He said, Saul, I've lived in the land of victory. That's where I come from. You're all worried about even achieving one. I come and have lived in that land. I've been a resident of victory. I've been through victory, and I've come from victory. And I'm not worried about achieving another victory, Saul. But you're the one sitting there concerned about victory. I don't worry about victory. I've experienced victory. Saul's trying to discourage him, and David is not just encouraging Saul, which he did. He's encouraging himself, saying, I have come from a lion and a bear. I have experienced my victory, Saul. You may think I don't have experience in warfare, but I have experience in victory.
Come on.
This is important because this is a change that happens inside of Saul immediately. When he sees this and he realizes what is going on with David, he goes, all right, you can go. He goes, hey, this is going to be the guy that's going to do something for our camp. Saul's heart all of a sudden gets adjusted. This is cool. Because David's, again, he's talking about this guy's the taunter of the living God, the armies of the living God. And he says, God's going to deliver him. We're going to skip ahead. And he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul says to David, go. Now he says it. Not you can't go. Go. And the Lord be with you. So he goes through a process and he tries to give him his armor. And you got to imagine, he just told him he's a youth. He's fitting youth sizes. He's not fitting grown-up sizes. It isn't in a double XL or something. He's down in the youth sizes. Now, again, this is important because he's so small, he can't fit in Saul's armor. Now, we know Saul was a tall guy anyway. But you get this picture where it's like, no, this ain't happening. Like, he couldn't even move. Like, I can't use my regular weapons. That's the same guy. This is why we get that little stature of David picture. It's the same guy that grabbed the lion by the beard, remember? That's why this is important. This wasn't like, well, maybe David was bigger than you think. Like, no, he couldn't even fit in the grown man's armor. He's like, right?
Yeah, come on.
Let's go to 42. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth. The Philistine thought in his own head, I've been a warrior since I was your age. Yeah. And you are nothing but a youth. You can't go before. He thought the same thing Saul did.
Come on.
Now, what a shame that the king of the army of Israel, of the chosen God, was thinking the same thing as the enemy. What a shame that the brother, the older brother, the very blood of that warrior was thinking the same thing as the enemy. Well, it's impossible that my own brother could speak and say something the devil would be saying. It's impossible that my brother, my own son, my own parent might align themselves with the devil's plan and speak for the enemy. No, it's not. He disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. David was so lucky that he actually got it in the Bible. So if he ever, like, you know, you're going to date that, you know, girl, and you're like, hey, it's in the Word. I'm ruddy and good looking. I just want you to be aware. It's written down I'm good looking. Like, Goliath thought this, and I was coming out there. Like, he doesn't seem like a homosexual, so he wasn't that way. He was just looking like, well, that's a ruddy, good looking young guy, but he shouldn't be out here fighting me. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog? David probably was thinking, yeah, I mean, you're to me. That you come to me with sticks. We know that he had sticks because he had the two, right?
Yeah.
He had the staff, the shepherd's staff,
yep.
Which on the back you would have notched already on there, the lion and the bear. And just like they did in those days, they would have carved the little image of the lion and the bear and the things that he's fought and beat before his victory. So he's looking at that as he's chasing the giant down. And we know that he had the sling.
Yep.
He had some sticks. You got sticks and stones. You know that sticks and stones may... Yeah. Well, here is proof. If you ever wanted to know. And this is also proof of the words part. Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And a Philistine cursed David by his gods, little g. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. And David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin. Like he had three arms, apparently. I pictured him as a normal giant. This guy, we even know he had a shield bearer in front of him. This, and his spear was like something, if you picked up, you'd be like, where are we putting this? Like, not I want to fight with this. where am I setting this? I don't want to hold this too long. We've got to put this down. You come to me with a sword and a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord. Again, so important. I'm not coming to you with sticks. I'm not coming to you with rocks. I'm not coming to you with my staff and with a sling. I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord of hosts. This is how we have to fight, not I'm coming to you with my means. Yes, I'm going to take care of my bills with my bank account. I'm going to come to you, God, with the name of the Lord of hosts. That's how I'm going to come to my fight. That's how I'm going to come to my battle. That's how I'm going to come to my war time is coming to my God in his name and going, God, you're the one who's going to deliver me. God, you're the one who has to show up. God, you're the answer and the solution. God. So he said to him, I'm going to come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled this day. The Lord will deliver you into my hand. Man, I love that. It's such a good story. It's so powerful what happens. He even tells them further on, he says, more so, I'm going to chop your head off.
He sure does.
I love that. Because that's the kind of thing only a youth would have said. Not I'm going to take you down. I'm going to take you down. I'm chopping your head off. Like, your big fat mouth is coming off your body. It's coming off the big fat body. It's going to go over there. Like, your head's coming off now, Mr. Big Talker. Yell at me with sticks. Ask me about, do I think you're a dog? You know, you've been talking so big, the mouth's coming off, Goliath. Why is this important? Well, I'm glad you asked. It's important because we know what David came from, and we've all come from a humble beginning, no matter where you came from. You came from something much less than what you're going to achieve, I hope. I hope you didn't come from the huge achievement of your life, and you're only headed downhill for the rest of it. I hope you at least have an upwards trajectory, because we should all be doing that. But more importantly, we've got to realize that when David came, he came against warfare from his own brother, warfare against himself from the army, warfare from Saul coming to him, warfare from the giant coming to him, all verbal, all assaults, all trying to discourage him.
Yeah.
And why this matters is, to me especially, this matters. I've written it down here multiple times. It matters to me because we do this so often ourselves, but we're not on David's side. We're very rarely finding ourselves on David's side. More often, we find ourselves fighting against what we're supposed to fight for. We find ourselves standing up against the thing we're supposed to support. We find ourselves sitting there warring against a David because we haven't been as successful taking down a giant. And in your life, if you're not taking down giants in your life, the chances are you are fighting a David somewhere in your life that God anointed, and God won't anoint you to fight his anointed. He's not going to help you fight and take down his anointed. So when you're fighting the very thing you're supposed to fight for, and you're fighting against it, God's grace, God's mercy, God's covering, God's blessing, that's gone off of you because you're making a war against something you're supposed to fight for. It's something that's it's a powerful statement to think about, but to realize that that's something that we do as people. We fight against, we wage war against, we resist against the thing God is trying to put in our life, the adjustment God's trying to make. We make excuse against. You're nothing, you're small, you're little, this isn't from God. We sit there and resist against. We don't believe it when we first hear it. We have to be encouraged to even believe the promise from God, the deliverance from God. The very man that came to deliver him from the giant was resisted, and fought from the army multiple times before he ever had to fight the giant. And we do the same thing. We resist and fight against the very thing that we're supposed to fight for. How is this important? Because when David threw that rock, when he threw that stone, God helped guide that stone. Now, David was a marksman. We know that. I still don't believe David would miss. But God helped direct that because this was going to be a one and done. You may have extra rocks in there, but that's because you planned, you're prepared. This isn't going to take extra rocks. You may only have a small target, big body, small target, but that rock's going where it's supposed to go. God was directing that stone because David was fighting against what he was supposed to fight against. But when Saul threw his spear at David, God deflected the spear from David because God will not anoint you to fight against what he's anointed. When you're fighting against the very thing you're supposed to fight for, God will deflect your attempts. You will be unsuccessful. You will be trying. You will think you're sitting in a seat of authority. You'll think that you have the power and abilities. You'll use the very thing that you've had success with before, but to no avail, you will not succeed. If you are fighting against a David, if you are standing against the anointing, if you are resisting the plan of God and his deliverance, he cannot anoint you. He cannot bless you. He cannot have you succeed. He will not guide your weaponry into the enemy. Well, surely this is the only time this has happened in the Bible. Well, surely you'd be wrong if you believe that. The devil resisted and fought against God, though he was the supply, and he got kicked out of heaven. Shortly following it, we see that the devil got Eve to see his perspective, his side of things, and she started to fight against the plan of God and fight for the plan of the devil inside the garden.
Yep.
Because she started to believe that there might be more, there might be greater things for me that God doesn't want me to have. And she believed that little lie that God is somehow trying to keep me from success instead of help me be propelled into it. You don't think it happened? How about Cain and Abel? Cain was fighting against Abel, who he should have been supporting and fighting for. Cursed his whole life. How about Abraham? How about Moses? How about Noah? Did Noah have a peaceful time building the ark? Or did he have a bunch of people fighting against him about it, taunting him on about it, teasing him on about it? A bunch of resistance. This is what happens. Moses went in there. You think he was widely received when he showed up at the camp? Go read the story again. You remember the Exodus? How he went to Pharaoh. He's like, hey, could you let my people go? And Pharaoh's like, cool, man, cool. Why don't you take off in the night? That way none of us... Is that what happened?
No.
Constant resistance and warfare.
Yeah.
But at least from then on, it was all good for Israel. Unless you read the rest of it. Right?
Yeah.
This is what happens.
Yeah.
Well, let's skip ahead. Surely it's not a New Testament thing. I mean, I remember Jesus. There was somebody called Jesus. And I remember that he was met with open arms from the scribes and the Pharisees. And especially the Jews, though. They really received him.
Mm.
This is like a pattern. But surely it stopped there because after Jesus, you know, died on the cross and he covered our sins in the blood and then he was redeemed, surely his disciples didn't experience any kind of warfare from people there trying to help, fighting against them. Guys, this is all throughout the Bible. It is the habit of people to fight against the very thing that's coming in to help them. You know, I've had surgery where they cut my side open and put a little tube in me. And I've had a few things done, but that surgery was one of the ones where I was terminal when I went in there. So when I went in, I had a flesh-eating bacteria and I had pneumonia. And I was terminal, so they couldn't even put me under or anything like that. They used local shots to try and numb the spot, and then they're chopping through and they're sticking stuff into my lungs. And I'm like, you know what? That local stuff, that stopped being effective the moment you hit me with a blade. Like, I've been stabbed. You know what this feels like? A lot of stabbings. Like just stabbing, stabbing, stabbing. And then I was more built than I am now, not built in a heavy way, built in a muscular way. So they had to cut through my lat muscle 7 times because it kept closing on them. I was like, there's, you know, DJ for all those gym trips. If you ever have an issue like this, definitely it doesn't pay off when they're like, let me just keep getting through that muscle. I remember my body... I wanted to backhand this doctor. This is why they need to put people under. I wanted to smack him because it's side of the bed. You know, just I'm just sitting there totally awake. My dad was sitting there on this side of me and he's doing this thing. And I'm sitting there. I'm talking with the nurses and stuff. And I'm like, dude, he's like, he's going to feel pinched. I'm like, that's not a pinch. That's a stab. I'm going to feel a stab. Next time, tell the person this is going to feel like a stab. And then inside, you're going to be like, you're going to feel some pressure moving around. No, it's going to feel terrible. I'm moving around. It's going to feel like your organs are being shoved out of place. You ever been really sick? Imagine that twice. That's what it's going to feel like. You're going to just jab stuff around, and then you won't really feel pain. Yes, you will. As soon as you ever coughed really hard and you just felt it down your throat, imagine that in your lung. They described it all these ways, like, who told you this story? I even asked the doctor. I was like, you ever had this done? No. I'm like, well, then shut up. And the nurses laughed. I was like, don't tell me what this feels like until, you know, afterwards, let me get one of those and I'll stab you through the side of your, and then you tell me if it felt like a pinch, if there was a little bit of pressure, did it burn a little bit? Like, no, that's not what I'm experiencing. I'm experiencing my body wanting to fight you even though you're trying to help me. I'm experiencing my response, my reaction is, I'm keeping my fist from just knocking you off your little chair because I'm like, he's trying to save me. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But my instinct, my flesh, all the pain, mm-hmm. your body's like, get away, get away, get away.
Come on.
You ever stepped on something sharp late at night? If you've ever had kids in your house, you have. Like you found out that Legos are actually torture devices. They have nothing to do with entertainment whatsoever. You step on one and you're like, that's impossible that that went through my foot, but it felt like it. Like, I swear I see the Lego on the top of my foot. But what you don't do is stand on it and think about it. Oh, this kills. I should definitely move this Lego after I step off of it. No, you don't. You hop. You can't get off the thing fast enough. You'll look stupid. You'll fall on something more painful than the Lego because your foot will come up faster than your body can even realize what's happened. Right? You ever touch something hot? There's a reason why the game Hot Potato is called Hot Potato. Because you don't get a hot potato and go, ooh, this is burning. Do you? Something throws something hot like that. Your instinct is as fast as your nerves and muscles can react. That could have been glass. I don't care what that was. It's not in my hands anymore because that burned. Like, that was an instinct. You know, I've had that happen before. I had a friend, Bobby, he was a friend I had since I was 13, and he woke me up one morning, and he shook me up, and I was in the midst of my troubled years. And I swung at him as my instinct, because somebody was shaking me awake. I didn't get shaken, you know, wake up. That didn't happen to me in those years. And I punched a hole in the side of my dresser, which was what I was laying next to. And he's like, I'm never waking you up again. I'm like, that's probably good. Thinking there, Bobby, like you could have got killed if that was your face, you know, I'd be apologizing to you. You wouldn't know it, but I'd be apologizing to you. Like, that's my instinct. My instinct was something's waking me up. Somebody's in here. You know, there's a bad guy on me. I don't know where I fell asleep, but you're going to fight against things that are actually for you. You are. I'm not cursing you. I'm telling you, this is going to happen in your life. You're going to have this instinct. It's going to kick in. I may be one of those targets of yours. Now, the cool part about me is I don't care. I don't care if you're offended at me. I don't care if you're upset at me. I don't care if you're bothered by me. I'm not trying to win a popularity contest. I wouldn't be a preacher if I was. I don't really care how much you like the things I say. I'm not doing it because you're going to like it. I'm not trying to put together a message that sounds funny to your ears so that you're going to like it and tickles you and makes you feel fancy. I could care less about that. I care only about helping you, giving you the best direction I can possibly give you, telling you what the Bible actually says, and giving you something clean to do about it in your life. And if you don't like it, there's a lot of churches. Find one that, you know, will tickle your ears and make you feel fancy, and you might like it, but it won't be me. I'm never doing that. I'm not interested in it.
Come on.
But because of that, there are going to be times when I'm going to say something to you, and you will not like me, and you will not like it, and your response is going to be to spew at me, and to fight at me, and to war on me, and guess what? I'm okay with that. Because I come from the land of victory. I have fought a lion and a bear before. It's not my first time on the battlefield, and I might be young, but I have experience in battle. I have experience winning, and I know that we're winners when we follow God. So I won't quit on him no matter what somebody comes to me with, no matter what kind of war comes at me, no matter what kind of assault comes at me, no matter what kind of bad words want to come at me, and people want to throw stuff at me, and they want to disrespect me, and they want to say you didn't, you couldn't, you haven't. It doesn't matter to me. To those people, I'm not going to give the, this is what we've already done. This is what I've already seen. I'm not going to give them all of the testimonies of my life.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have the time to do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell them, listen, whatever you're fighting, God is still bigger than that thing.
Yeah.
Whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be emotional. It could be physical. It could be beyond what you think is in your control, because that giant certainly was. But God is the victor. He is the one whose land we're supposed to be residents of. He is the one who we're supposed to follow, and he's the one we should be concerned about when the devil comes to taunt and hurt our lives. Not about ourselves, but about his name. That's the one that's being taunted. That's the one that's being tainted by this garbage. It's God's army. It's the Lord of hosts' army. It's his name is on this. His badge is over this. Don't let him be mocked because you want to be a coward. Right?
Yeah.
Now, the last thing I'll encourage you with is this. One of the reasons why the army was the way that they were is because they allowed fear in. The moment fear gets in, getting faith in that same little container is impossible. You can't have them both in there. Fear is like the antithesis of faith. It's the opposite of. The Bible even says what you fear, that's going to come upon you. It's like anti-faith. If there's anti-matter, it's anti-faith type thing, right? It's the opposite thing of faith. Faith you're believing in is not for a bad thing. You're not like, I'm trying to faith in this giant wart, but I just can't seem to get it to come. You're not faithing in a bad thing. You're faithing in good things. You're fearing in bad things. Like, I'm afraid this will happen. I heard this noise in my car. I'm afraid it's going to break down. You might fear something in a lot more often than you ever faith something in as a Christian, because fear is so easy to operate in. You don't have to do anything for fear. All you have to do for fear, do you have to go fight for fear? Do you have to even go march for fear? All you got to do is go sit in a hole for fear. That's all you got to do. Where you been today? At my house? What have you been achieving today? Being in my house? Done any great things today? Same things I did yesterday. Oh, I see. Sometimes we need to realize, you know, today is a good day to start fighting the right things. You know, I hear me say all the time, today's a good day to fight the right things.
Come on, that's right.
Today is not a good day to fight your siblings. Today is not a good day to fight your parents and your children. Today is not a good day to fight the loved ones. Today is not a good day to fight God's authority in your life. Today is not a good day to go fight municipalities out in the world and the government system. Like, we're standing up against the police. They're unjust. Like, not a good day to fight the authorities that God has placed around your life, whether you like them or not. Today's a good day to fight the enemy. Today's a good day to fight a Goliath. Today's a good day to fight the thing that's been taunting your life. Today's a good day to fight something that you can't possibly overcome by yourself, but the God who's with you can help you overcome it. So at least you can start having an experience of victory. Because if you don't believe that that lion was scary to a youth who was even younger then you've never seen a lion in person. If you don't believe a bear was scary, anybody here ever seen a dog? You ever seen a dog eat food? You ever seen a lovely, kind, friendly dog eat food when another dog tries to come and get its food? Well, that bear was eating a lamb.
Come on.
It was chomping some food. That was the angriest that bear was going to get. You're coming to take my food. Even a good dog gets mad when you come to take its food. Doesn't it? You got to teach a dog a long time to get the dog not to be mad when you go to take its bowl early. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. I can prove that. I've watched Miguel do that with chocolate cake. You don't think it's true. You go buy him like a triple chocolate cake and take it away from him halfway. Even on his birthday, this is what he said. I'm throwing you under the bus, but it's okay. You're good under there. He's like a mechanic. This is what happened on his birthday. He got a special, two different pieces of pie, right? Like this pie cake thing. I don't know what it was. But the one of them was like all the different types of chocolate. It was like some kind of, somebody read his diary. We're like, oh, he likes chocolate, does he? Let's throw every chocolate we can find on here. Different types of chocolate, all right? It looked like chocolate, and then they put chocolate on top to make sure that the different chocolates that were in there, yeah, they're like crunchy chocolate stuff. And then it was, so he remembers it in living color. I only remember it from my perspective. I was on the table. But when it came, this was his proclamation ahead of time. I'm going to share some with everybody. Then it came and he said, I'm going to share some of that one with everybody. That's the truth. I'm not making this up. This is literally what happened. And even though he desperately, he had his pastor there, he had one of my ministry friends, my pastor's son was there. Even though he desperately wanted to share with everybody, he was like, if I could shave something that was so thin you could see through it off this cake, that's what I want you to eat. Like, I want you to know I want you to eat, but that's not a my piece. Can't you order your own piece to try your piece? This is my chocolate. This is Miguel. He's one of the best guys with this. He gives off of his own back. But you take his food. Right? He becomes Joey on Friends. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. What just happened here? What just happened here? That was my French fry. Put my French fry back. That's, right? You even take somebody that's good when you go to their feeding and they get ferocious. That's the kind of lion and bear that David fought. Not the ones you see in a nature show that are like climbing a tree. You know, that's not like, oh, you fought that little bear, did you? Like, what a thing. Or the lions that are laying there on the safari, like underneath the shade, like you went up there and killed that lion. What a big, brave guy you are. No, this was the feeding version of those animals with food that they needed to survive in their mouth. And you're going to take that literal food from them. What I'm saying is you're going to always have to fight something really scary if you want to have a victory story and be from the land that you're supposed to come from. And if you're ever going to, and if you read on, you'll see this, but if you're ever going to affect a good change in your brother or sister's life, in your friend's life, and the people around you's life, you're going to have stories like this, because the log's going to have to come out of your eye. You're going to have to realize the way things really are if you're ever going to affect a real change in someone else's life and help them. You want to actually go help an army someday? You better fight a lion and a bear when it comes. Otherwise, you're going to get there and just be like, where's the closest hole? I see a giant. This is my habit. I'm just one of these guys. This is what I've always done my whole life. You don't always have to be a loser. You don't always have to be a coward. You don't always have to hide in holes. You can decide one day to stand up and go fight your first fight and win, because God will help you. He will deliver that enemy into your hand. And the coolest part to me of this whole story is after Goliath falls, the whole army gets filled again with courage in a moment, in an instant. They don't sit there going, well, he said you guys are going to be our servants. They grabbed their swords and they started to charge. They got God back in on their heart, God back in on their side. They got courage back in, and they said, this is who we are. That's who you are, Philistines. This is who we are. And they charged the way they should have in the very first place. That story should have been a Goliath Philistine came out, stood in the valley, taunted the army, and the army killed him on the way to the rest of the people they went and killed. That's the way the story should have been, because that's how God's people are supposed to fight, is according to the word God gives them. But the moment you start believing the serpent, the moment you start believing the Philistine, you're going to sit there in fear, and you're going to be debilitated, and you're going to stop being able to achieve, and you're going to stop winning, and you're going to start wondering. And my point to you is you're going to find yourself sitting there quarreling and fighting against your Davids instead of making war against your Goliaths. And then your life is going to leave a legacy and a testimony that's the opposite that it should. And instead of being a land of victory, and instead of having a life of victory, you're going to have a life of defeats. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be because you made war and you're waging war on all the wrong things. And it's a habit, and it will perpetuate itself. Lord, I pray this morning that you help this word to soak in. So those of us, even those of us that don't like what I'm saying, those of us that may not like the words, they know it's true, but they don't like it. Even them, God, we can get this in our hearts and realize, no, I need it. I'm not winning. I need to win. I'm not achieving the goals I'm supposed to. I need to achieve. I'm not seeing victory the way I'm supposed to. I've been seeing battle, though. I've seen a lot of battle. I feel like I've been through 40 days of battle. I'm constantly fighting things I'm afraid of. God, we're not supposed to be anxious for anything. We're not supposed to fear. We're supposed to be standing firm. We're supposed to be already prepared. We're supposed to be covered by you. Our ears should already be covered by salvation. We shouldn't even believe the words of the enemy. God, help us that we'd fight against the anointed, that we'd fight against the anointing, that we'd fight against your promise, that we'd fight against the people that you've sent to our lives to help deliver us. Help us to stop doing that. To wage war against the ministry, against church in general, against the word, against, well, it has never worked for me before. God, help us to not be people that wage war against the good, playing that we're on the good team when we're playing for the bad team. God, help us to not keep perpetuating the same fall of man over and over and over. And believe that you're the God that delivers, you're the God that saves, you're the God that heals, you're the God that sets free, you're the God that redeems. Believe that you're the God who said that you will do it, and surely you will. You didn't call us out of darkness so that we could just be free. You called us out of darkness to be in your light. God, help us to experience that. Help us to live like that. Help us to believe that if we'll chase you, you'll show up. If we'll seek you, that we'll find you. Instead of believing the opposite. We've never found him before. People that don't look for you won't find you. Help us to chase you, God. Help us to chase your plan. Help us to not believe the enemy. Help us to never listen to a Goliath. Help us to chase down the next victory because of the last victory. Help us to use the word of our testimony to overcome the way we're supposed to. Help us to not lose courage when the people and the loved ones in our lives try to wage war against us and stop us. Instead, help us to gain courage and be increased by you. In the word of our testimony, we will overcome it and fight the Goliath and watch it fall, and courage will come back to those very same people that taunted David, teased David, mocked David. We're fighting for him on his side right after that. God, help us. Help us. Let this get into our lives today so that we can go out as warriors for you tomorrow. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.